And it, State Affairs, come to order. It is 9 o'clock on the dot on the second day of February. I guess the Marmot-Sot Shadow, we're in for a continued deficit. So it's a, that we have members present, Senator Willikowski, Senator Cogdill, myself, Senator Huggins is in a budget subcommittee. He'll be joining us shortly. We're going to get started right away. Commissioner Hoffbeck has a beck and call upstairs at 10 o'clock, and thank you for the Senate Finance Committee for delaying their proceedings so we can continue the unveiling of the governor's plan. So we'll jump right in it. It's your agenda and the governor's agenda, and you have Attorney General Harvey Milk. What?
Thank you, Chairman. Assistant Attorney General Bill Milks.
Bill Milk. God, there was a movie, I think. I'm sorry. That's, and if there's a Mrs. Milks, I'm really sorry. That's a good start here. It's worse than no plan or a bad plan. Please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Randy Hoffbeck, Commissioner of Revenue. We're picking up on, and with me is Bill Milks, Assistant Attorney General. We're picking up on slide 22 of the presentation. I think the Attorney General worked through most of this slide before we ended in our last session. But just to kind of recap it, we kind of used the underlying petroleum model that from the Department of Revenue in kind of determining the parameters that to load the model. So oil price was based on the oil price forecast that with the starting point is the revenue forecast price point, and then it runs through a probabilistic model of various price points and to determine statistically what the median value would be. For price, we use the production volumes from the revenue sources book. These are conservative in that they only deal with the production that is currently online or where the fields are actually in development. It does not take into account undeveloped fields. So it's and then those forecasts are given some weighting for uncertainty as well. So it's a relatively conservative production forecast that underlies the model. And then it uses the shortcut model, which is the internal model that is used by revenue in determining price, production, and costs. So where do we start then? The starting balance for the model was $55 billion. And if you just kind of walk through the calculation, and, you know, your starting balance at $55 billion, you have inflows each year. We have investment income coming from our financial model. We have 100% of the production taxes going in from our petroleum model, as well as 100% of the royalties from the petroleum model are inflows into the system. The outflows are our expenses, the dividend that is paid, and the draw that is taken out of the system. And that draw is held fixed until 2020, at which point in time that draw then begins to inflate going forward. So the starting balance plus inflows minus outflows gives us our end of the year balance, and of course that end of the year balance becomes the starting balance for the next year, and so forth through 2040, which was the length of the modeling that was done. In running that,
Commissioner, can you go back to that schedule of when the dividend inflates? Playing with a Tom Brady ball for a couple of years in.
Yes, for the, in order to stabilize the expenditures, we actually don't inflate the draw until 2020.
Just a little lower pressure for better grip.
Exactly.
Okay. Thank you.
So the we can sustain a $3.3 billion draw from the modeling as an annuity from our financial and petroleum wealth. And in doing so, if you looked at the 2040 balance when we model it, it would equal the 2016 balance plus inflation. So embedded within the assumptions of what the what's a sustainable fixed draw gets us to essentially an inflation-proofed fund. Going on to slide 24. Then how do we actually create durability in the model? Well, one thing that we do is we actually look at two components. Is we start with a target balance of four times the draw, and we also put $3 billion transfer into the CBR as part of the creation of that starting balance. So we actually start with about $11.6 billion in the first year when we include the transfers in from that year plus the $3 billion transfer from CBR. So we got a target balance of four times a prior year draw, and then but the reality is that the fund itself, the permanent fund, is not large enough to sustain this draw if we just simply launch it and leave. That we actually have to have some ability to work with the inflows during the life of the modeling. So if the earnings reserve is at the target balance, then 100% of the production taxes and 50% of the royalties are deposited into the corpus of the fund. We actually build and strengthen the corpus of the fund. And then the other 50% of the royalties essentially drop through the earnings reserve and become the payment for the dividend in any given year. However, if the earnings reserve is under the target balance, it's under that four times the prior year draw, up to 100% of the taxes and 75% of the royalties are deposited directly into the earnings reserve in order to build up the size of the earnings reserve. The only part that would flow into the corpus is the mandated 25% of the royalties that are constitutionally mandated to go into the corpus. That allows us to maintain that four times target within the earnings reserve. If the earnings reserve ever exceeds the target, all of the excess is transferred back into the corpus. So the earnings reserve can't hold more than four times the draw. Any excess would go back into the corpus of the fund, either directly because the revenues went directly into the corpus, or would be transferred back if at the end of the year the earnings was more than four
Mr.
times.
Chairman.
Yes, sir.
If I could just ask a question. I'll use a couple of round numbers. So let's just say we pay out a dividend of $1 billion. What you're saying is that has to be a $5 billion balance. It has to be $4 billion. We draw $1 billion out. So help me understand that math. So let's just say we paid out a dividend. I'm just using those round numbers. It draws that the earnings reserve fund down, right? At that point, you're calculating on what it was before you paid the dividend or after?
We would look at the dividend after the transfer would determine which direction the monies would flow at the start of the next year, whether they flow into the earnings reserve or
so. It's after you've drawn that money out, then you count it up, and the reserve then has to be four times of that in order to proceed with your next calculation.
That is correct.
Okay. I think I got it.
Welcome, Senator Huggins. Thank you.
Going to the next slide, then. Slide 25. Ways that we make this process itself robust over time, so that we don't have a chance of the earnings reserve going to zero anytime during the life of the modeling through 2040. Again, we talked about we have really a robust earnings reserve, cash balance, and cash inflows. We have the $3 billion transfer from the CBR. We have statutory net income that flows into the earnings reserve as it does right now on an annual basis, and then of course petroleum revenue as needed to keep the four-time balance would flow into the earnings reserve. The other thing that I think really makes this work long term is this. Ability that we've got these long lead opportunities to adjust if we see that things are starting to go south on us. The 4-to-1 coverage ratio, of course, gives us essentially enough coverage between the 4-year periodic review period. the periodic review itself creates a robust system here that if at some point in time we see that we've just that our underlying assumptions don't fit the modeling or don't fit the draw, that we that periodic review would allow us to catch it and modify the draw before we jeopardize the earnings reserve, the balance in the earnings reserve. Very robust modeling that was done behind this, both by staff and then McKinsey and company that went in and reviewed and our modeling as well, and actually and suggested some changes to the modeling. And but ultimately, we have sufficient time to react. Because we're looking at this every 4 years, that we have time to react if we see that something isn't working properly.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Todd Kill.
So is the modeling embedded in the statutory changes that you're making? Is that going to be something that we'll see as a methodology?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, it won't be within the bill, but we will bring the modeling forward and present the modeling.
Yeah, as long as we have the principles that are going to be used and where they're embedded so that they don't just dissipate when there's somebody turn around and look at it within 3 years, right? That's all.
Oh, through the chair, Senator Coghill, yes, there will be a standardized review that matches the modeling so that we don't try it. So there's no opportunity to kind of skew the data in the review period.
Or we could have a constitutional amendment that clearly defines it as your consultant said was the preferable route.
Going on then, actually, I'll open it for questions here before I start to talk about the dividend. Is there any questions on the modeling before we start?
Senator Coghill.
In that page that we just left, you talk about the transfer of CVR. That is going to be a constant course of conversation as we go through here. It sounds easy to say, but it's a little more complicated to install. So you're going to turn the CBR over to this earnings reserve durability fund, basically. That requires either constitutional change or a annual vote, if I understand correctly. And what are you contemplating?
So the chair, Senator Coghill, we see that $3 billion transfer as a one-time event, that once it's transferred, it's part of the earnings reserve and would stay in the earnings reserve. I think there's some, you know, discussion surrounding that particular assumption, and you know, and Bill Milks is here that can talk about that at any point in time. I think we indicated that we would talk about that at some point in time in the discussion, so whenever.
And just for the public's edification and reminder, the Constitutional Budget Reserve is a constitutional amendment passed by the voters in 1990. And that's and it would be, I guess, dismantled and put into the statutory fund under the governor's transfer plan. It would take the constitutionally protected money and put it in a into a straight majority spending account.
Chairman Stoltz, the plan would move the monies into either the permanent fund earnings reserve or the statutory budget reserve. It wouldn't dismantle the constitutional budget reserve because there'd still be monies that flow in from legal settlements and audits that would continue to flow in there on an annual basis. And quite frankly, there's potential to leave some money in the CBR just as kind of that for the unexpected events that occur from time to time. So,
well, the legal requirement is that it's repaid when it's borrowed, and under the governor's plan, it would permanently exit that requirement. That the balance the only replenishment would be through royalties and settlements. It wouldn't you don't envision it being repaid as it was during the half a dozen years ago or so.
For the chair,
post 2007-2008.
The chair, it might be appropriate to let Assistant Attorney General Bill Milks
speak on that. Well, sir, I guess we're not talking about a legal strategy. We're talking about a political strategy, and I don't think we have a political Attorney General's office. So I think it's a political question, isn't it?
Well, Chairman Stoltz, I think there is that kind of that underlying legal argument that I think people have right now about what will be swept. Has to be swept back versus what can be kept in the earnings reserve. We're not looking at the changing the repayment structure, but essentially there would still be that sweep back into the CBR of funds that are left over at the end of any given year to repay the debt. It's just that we don't see the monies in the earnings reserve as a sweepable fund. So
it can be, money in the earnings reserve isn't sweepable. It can be appropriated by simple majorities.
That is correct.
Okay. Senator Wilikowski.
Oh, just is this the time to get into this issue, Mr. Chairman, or do you want
to? I think he invited questions, and it's always time to ask questions about this. We're trying to understand it as well as the public.
So I guess we have dueling legal opinions on this issue, I don't know what the right answer. I don't know what the Supreme Court would say. So, but let's say the court did say, because I imagine there would be a lawsuit over this. Someone who had their permanent fund cut from $2,000 down to $400 or so, probably going to file a lawsuit at some point. What happens then? To what would be the impact to the state at that point? Would the court come in and just say the budget's illegal? You should have swept this money. I mean, what would be the legal ramifications at that point if there were a lawsuit?
Mr. Milks.
Thank you.
Bill Milks.
Yes. Thank you very much, Chair. Senator, I think the issue, you know, that's been identified so far is this question of whether or not the earnings reserve account would be subject to a sweep. And maybe just a quick background on that, since that's awfully, you know, dealing with some sort of inside baseball analysis there are these terms. You know, we have the budget reserve, as the Chair has mentioned, constitutional budget reserve. It has four parts to it. It has an A, B, C, and D. A identifies monies that go into the budget reserve fund, and those are settlements of disputes over royalties and related litigation. That goes into that fund. B and C talk about how the legislature can appropriate from them from that fund. B describes, Section B describes a way to appropriate from the fund, which is by majority vote, and that is you look at whether or not the monies available for appropriation this year are less than the monies available for appropriation last year. And if there are fewer monies, less money available for appropriation, then the difference between the two can be the legislature by majority vote could appropriate out of the CBR. Then you have subsection C, which is the three-quarter vote section. That's a section that provides that the legislature, for any public purpose, can appropriate money out of the CBR. So, and then you have subsection D, which seems to be the issue that's been teed up here a bit, which is the question of the payback to the CBR. And the payback is also, you know, shorthand, people use the word the sweep. And we have one Alaska Supreme Court case that's analyzed the CBR on this question of both what's available for appropriation and making this calculation of how much can be appropriated out of that account or whether or not a three-quarters vote or one-half or majority votes required. Then we have the subsection D that we're talking about here, this payback provision. We have one decision out of the last Supreme Court, Hickel versus Cooper. As we laid out in our letter, which I understand the committee has, in Hickel versus Cooper, the Alaska Supreme Court said there's a difference between the language used in the Constitution between B and C and D. And they were quite clear that for D, which is our sweep or payback provision, what must be paid back are monies in the general fund that are available at the end of the succeeding fiscal year. And the court quite clearly pointed out there that that's monies in the general fund. It is not, so therefore it's not monies in other funds outside the general fund, and then use the earnings reserve account as its specific example. That's very significant to us because in that decision the court on the one hand said for purposes of of determining what's available for appropriations, the earnings reserve account is available by the legislature to appropriate. The entire earnings reserve account is available for appropriations. But the payback provision is restricted to funds in the general fund, and they identify the earnings reserve account as a fund in the general fund. So just with that sort of maybe not so quick, but just background, then we had the question recently presented to us, well, what then if you're going to have an appropriation bill, a transfer from the constitutional budget reserve over to the earnings reserve account, won't that mean the earnings reserve account will be subject to payback or sweep? And our analysis on that is no, that's not what that means based on the plain language of the Constitution as HICL has informed us, because the governor's bill does not change the statute, does not change the fact that earnings reserve account is not in the general fund. Now, does that mean nothing gets subject to a sweep? No. The provision still exists. Funds in the general account and funds in the sub-accounts of the general fund would be subject to a sweep. But as far as the question of the earnings reserve, we don't think so, because we think the language matters and the court was pretty clear about that. Now, there have been certainly the suggestions been raised that, well, if you're going to change the nature of earnings reserve account, so you're going to start paying, you're going to start using it for general government expenditures, and you're going to add monies to it, well, that's changing it in such a way that maybe a court will change its mind and say, okay, that account really is part of the general fund. And on that point, I think, first off, we think the existing law is that it's not subject to the sweep. Whether or not a court would decide to change its mind, a court can always decide to change its mind. Whether or not the issues that have been identified seem important to have a court change its mind, well, two issues have been identified. The earnings reserve account will now be used to support general government operations. There'll be appropriations out of it. Well, that's true under all the plans submitted for utilization of the permanent fund earnings. And to us, in the HICL court, in the decision, the court knew that. And they specifically held earnings reserve account as available for appropriations. Not that the earnings reserve account is restricted only to a specific purpose, which would be to pay dividends. And so we have that court decision, and I think Department of Law has always looked at it as if you thought that account, if one considered that account restricted only to paying dividends, then you'd have a problem under yet another constitutional provision that you'd have a dedicated account. So the first point that's been raised is, it's going to be used for general government expenditures, and we don't think that would really change the analysis. The second point is you're going to start appropriating money into it, so it's not just going to be an account comprised only of income from the permanent fund. Well, that is certainly true, as is the first point, that it would be used for general government expenditures. Is that a meaningful difference? Well, I don't know. You'd still have the plain language of the Constitution that says the payback is limited to funds in the general fund. That theory would suggest that any time the legislature appropriates out to another fund other than a fund in the general fund, it suddenly converted that into a general fund account that's subject to this sweep. And, of course, the legislature in the past has appropriated from the constitutional budget reserve and general fund to other accounts. The legislature's appropriated the PCE fund out of the CBR. That's not a general fund. The legislature's appropriated to the, just recently, a substantial appropriation to the pension funds. They're not in the general fund. So ultimately, I just gave a very long answer maybe to one question, but we did think it was important to give some background here. We recognize that there's that a legal issue raised. We're comfortable with our analysis that relying on the plain language, the Constitution, and HICL, that it's meaningful, that the earnings reserve account is not in the general fund. That's the distinction. It doesn't mean there'd be no other funds that would be subject to the Section D payback. funds in the general fund, including the sub-accounts, would continue to be subject to them.
And now your OMB director was queried about this, said, well, there is a potential problem, and we might need to change the Constitution to fix it. And when the term fix is used around here, I think of a lot of my constituents consider that repair, and sometimes it may not be broken. My ranching relatives have a different term for fix, and I just wonder if the fix is in. when you fix an animal so it can't perform functions, and it's so I don't know what fix means, but your OMB director has acknowledged that hey, this is a problem. We might need to change the Constitution. I guess we got to make sure that we get the make sure that we get the positions of the administration more clear. And I know this has been an evolving discussion, and but you got to range from the same sheet of music. You have your OMB director saying we probably need to change the Constitution because, in her terms, it's broken. I'm not sure the public thinks it's broken, but maybe the governor just wants to open the spigot up, or the OMB director. I don't know. I am trying to figure this out. This is an interesting discussion that, you know, we hear. If we were talking to the permanent fund folks, they would say the earnings reserve is managed as part of the fund, and that's inconsistent, and that's the way it facto. But the fact is, you can spend earnings reserve with a simple majority. And there's been resistance from many of us doing that with the. Absent other things happening, that we treat it, you know, it's always been treated, if it's available for general fund, it's treated as a general fund and making appropriations for inflation proofing and paying dividends. It doesn't have restrictions of supermajority votes. And I guess we need to make sure that when you're going to lie on a decision, and I'm certainly anxious, on the Thursday meeting, the Attorney General said we would have all the past legal opinions from the different attorney generals so we could see if there's a consistent thread. And I know members are anxious to dig into those and see if there is a consistent thread. And I don't expect you to, this is just one of many of the governor's bills. I'm sure he's got other stuff he's worried about as well. But that's when we're trying to do our due diligence here, and we'd like to have those legal opinions well in advance. I don't want to have them passed out at the beginning of a meeting and have us trying to read them and keep up with you, because we'd sure like to work through these legal issues. We have the two opinions that are now dueling, and we'd certainly like to have the compendium of history of attorney generals past, except for especially one of them who is a kitchen cabinet advisor for the governor and seems to be a key policymaker as well, Mr. Botello. I'm sure in his decade here, he probably wrote a few of those himself. So I'd like us and the public to be able to look at those. And Senator Wilkowski, I know you're anxious to ask it.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the issue of the sweep is one issue, and there you have a different opinion than what our legislative council has. The other issue is on just the fact that you're depositing money in the permanent fund. And if I could just read one sentence, Mr. Chairman, that and maybe you could address this, give us your opinion on this, because I don't know if you have or not. Here's what our council said. The Attorney General has in the past concluded that once money is deposited into the permanent fund, the money may only be used for income-producing investments, and the legislature may not, even if the deposits exceeded the constitutional requirement and were made with the intent that they be retrievable, transfer the money out of the permanent fund. And she cites a 1977 AG opinion at the time where the legislature was looking to put some money in the earnings reserve and be able to take it out at a later time. Sort of exactly a very similar situation where we are today.
Just to interrupt, to follow up, there were inquiries by past administration individual legislators about the process of repealing appropriate, doing a reappropriation, doing an end run, and if we could have a discussion of that issue too, because that concerned a lot of us that there was an attempt both by individual legislators and past administrations. I'm sorry to interrupt.
So that's the second issue. I don't know if you've addressed that. If you could maybe give us your opinion on that.
Yes, through the chair, Senator. When money is appropriated into the principal of the corpus of the permanent fund, it's irretrievable. That's been our department's analysis for a long time. The difference here is we are talking about appropriating money into their earnings reserve account. That's a separate statutory account. It's comprised only of income of the permanent fund. The Alaska Supreme Court in Hickel versus Cooper, I think that was in the maybe 1992, but identified that that's a separate account of the permanent fund. It is the earnings of the permanent fund. It is open for appropriation, completely available for appropriation. So that's the distinction in our minds, is if you have a statutorily created account which can be fully appropriated from, we would think the legislature in its general power of appropriation under the Constitution has the ability to appropriate money into that account.
Mr. Chairman, if I could. And I think it's that's a fair interpretation, and again, it's just we have your interpretation, which is diametrically opposite of our attorney's, legislative attorney's interpretation, and I think this is about balancing risk going forward. And my concern, and I think a big concern for many legislators, is what if we go ahead and do this plan, and then a court says that was unconstitutional, and we've passed budgets based on that. You have a court fight, which I would assume there probably would be, because people's dividends will be affected in a pretty significant way. What is the impact at that point? Are we, if you have a court coming out saying your whole budget is unconstitutional because you inappropriately took money out of the earnings reserve, doesn't that cause significant harm to potential government shutdown? Isn't that what the likely outcome would be if the court said your budget is unconstitutional? Every appropriation that was made would be unconstitutional.
Through the chair. Senator, I think if there was a challenge to that, the outcome would seem reasonably to me to be that if the court changed its mind and decided that the earnings reserve account, these additional funds placed into the earnings reserve account, are subject to a sweep, well, then those additional funds maybe would have to be paid back to the CBR. That wouldn't make the entire budget unconstitutional. It would be an issue of whether or not the constitutional budget reserve should receive additional funds if they have not already been repaid.
There's two points. There's the issue of the sweep, but then there's the issue which our, at least our attorney is saying, is once the money goes in the permanent fund, it's irretrievable. You can't take it back out. And I mean, that's the second constitutional issue.
Through the chair, again, all I could note on that is that reference that's included there is talking about a period of time which there was no earnings reserve accounts established by statute, and it was not at a time which the last Supreme Court has already told us the earnings reserve account is available for appropriation. So this plan does not envision placing money into the corpus or the principal of the permanent fund and removing that money, no.
If I couldn't share. And you're arguing legalities with me, and I don't know what the answer is because your opinion is directly opposite of what our attorney's opinion is. I'm asking, what's the impact to the state? What's the impact to the every appropriation that we made? If our attorney is correct, you have a situation where potentially any money that's produced from this is unconstitutional. And I think that's a significant impact that we need to have a discussion about. Or you're saying that's I'm interpreting that incorrectly. I guess I'm asking you, assume our attorney is correct in her interpretation that this appropriation is unconstitutional. Both the sweep is unconstitutional potentially, and just the mere fact of putting the money makes it irretrievable and you can't take it out again is unconstitutional, and a court agrees with our attorneys, then I'm asking you, what's the impact? We pass a budget by a simple majority vote. The court comes back and says, you shouldn't have done that. What happens at that point? Is every appropriation that's been made unconstitutional?
Through the chair, again, I think even your counsel is talking about whether or not additional money is placed in to the earnings reserve would have to be returned to the budget reserve fund. So I think that's the reasonable likelihood if the court was to change its mind. And then ultimately, of course, I guess, in the Commissioner of Revenue is right here, but I know he has already, I think, explained on Thursday regarding if there's the constitutional budget reserve transfer is not, well, I'll let you pick up from there.
For the record, Randy Hoffman, Commissioner of Revenue. Essentially, if it is found that it has to be swept and put back in the CBR, it's not a fatal flaw to the plan. What it does mean, though, is that part of the revenues on an annual basis are going to have to come out of the CBR. We can't get them all out of the earnings reserve at that point in time, which creates some additional uncertainty and volatility in that $3.3 billion draw, because it's going to require a three-quarter vote to get part of it. So it it's not a fatal flaw. It just makes every year a little bit more difficult to get that sustainable draw available for appropriation.
I'm afraid there's reliance on the court. Their funding's going to be in any budget, so they're going to want to ratify it. And I just, every time I look out at that building that blocks the view from the Capitol, the Diamond Building, that was the way that was funded outside of the general obligation bonds going to revenue bonds, which I think was constitutionally questionable, but now ratified by the courts, funded the building they wanted badly. And I hate to say it, but sometimes our Supreme Court can be a little political as well, our court system by nature. And I think that it sounds like there's a reliance that there's constitutional questions, but hey, the court will take care of us because their funding's in this bill too, whatever. So that's just my jaded cynicism coming through, but only backed up by history. I don't think that's a question.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Coghill, your skepticism of the courts?
just as a, when we're having a look at it in the broad terms as a policy matter, we see the CBR and the permanent fund very, very differently. I think we agree that once something goes into the corpus of the permanent fund, it stays there. To its main purpose then is to produce income. The Constitution said that it would go out to a general fund or some other way. Once the earnings is there, it would go out to a general fund or whichever way we designed it by law, which we did. So, but that's not true of the CBR. The CBR is available at a three-quarter vote, and the earnings stay within the CBR. Very different approach. And so when we were looking at it, we were thinking to use the earnings reserve, I think, is probably appropriate, but the CBR adding to it looks to us like an annual three-quarter appropriation. It's just what it looks like to us, and I can tell you the political pressure as a policy matter is there for us. And so no matter what the legal nuance is, it still comes down to a practical policy call.
I think subsection D says it's we're not taking an appropriation, we're taking a loan.
Right.
But
And I just wanted to, for those listening in, we crossed over from permanent fund to CBR and back over to permanent fund. I think that was necessary to kind of draw a little distinction there, because they're very different approaches. Whatever is earned out of the permanent fund is available to be used the way we designed by law. But the constitutional budget reserve had a very, very clear in and out requirement, and the sweep is one of them. So I think that's where, as a practical policy call, you're going to see us stay there until probably the Constitution is changed. That's just a practical matter. So then it's a matter of how do we continually draw out of it to solve your plan. And I guess that's where we're heading for that question.
Senator Wilkowski?
From a policy perspective, this is a huge change. It has constitutional issues. There's a pretty simple solution that gets you to the same place if you wanted to go there, and it would simply be to appropriate the money from the earnings reserve every time you need it, right? You're looking at taking $3.3 billion out of the earnings reserve. There's $7-8 billion in the earnings reserve, I believe. Why not just go that route instead of making this complicated policy change?
through the chair, Senator Wilikowski. The change creates the greatest amount of stability in the draw, and so that's why that's in the proposal. Now, like I said, it's not a fatal flaw if we can't move the CBR and have to do it, as you suggested, just out of the earnings reserve, and then on years where the inflow into the earnings reserve may not be sufficient, have to make some additional draw from the CBR. I mean, that, you know, starts to look more like what we're doing now, and takes a little bit of the stability out of the system. But again, it's not a fatal flaw in the idea of having some kind of relatively constant revenue stream coming from our investments to help fund government operations and services. So again, it's not a fatal flaw. We think we have more stability if we make the move. If it just comes down to the fact that move can't be made, we can work within the CBR as well if necessary.
Yeah, we don't want to get into what former Senator and Governor Huey Long talked about, this elixir they made out of. One you made from skinning the bark up and one down. One was called Low Papa Hyam and the other was High Papa Lorum. And that's, I want to make sure we're just not, we go through this process that the governor's proposing, we're just putting the elixir in a different bottle but changing the Constitution and framework there's misunderstanding or confusion just fuels skepticism.
Yeah, and Chairman Stoltz, the goal here is to have some kind of rules-based, systematic approach for using earnings, and not just have a random appropriation on an annual basis to fill a void from other incomes. You know, if we're going to use earnings, we want to use it in a systematic rules-based system, and that's what we're trying to get to.
Rules, which. Sounds like it's like watching an NFL game. Where's the public's instant replay? That's why they kind of like the constitutional protections where they have it. Please proceed.
We're through with that particular controversial issue, let's move on to the dividend.
I don't know if it's controversial. I think we're just trying to throw it out where we're going. It's Senator McGuire. Thank you.
Thank you. I just wanted to make sure that I understood, at least on the record, through the chair, Commissioner, that your position then, controversial opinions withstanding, is that irrespective of the sweep concern, that new monies placed in there, those from royalties, et cetera, would still not be subject to the sweep. So in other words, you think the opinions only place in jeopardy that which is in the CBR? I mean, do you think putting new funds, new dollars, new royalties, et cetera, does that make them subject to the sweep as well?
Through the chair, Senator McGuire, based on the Attorney General's opinion, we believe that those are not subject to the sweep.
Okay, so it's only the CBR portion itself.
Through the chair, Senator McGuire, we don't think the CBR is either. What we're simply saying is if there is a sweep provision and money ends up in the CBR, we can use it that way as well.
I think what my concern through the chair is that you're trying to grow a corpus to create some stability for the government, and in doing that, you're going to propose to put new revenues in, new royalties, et cetera. And if it were just the question about whether or not the original CBR were in jeopardy, I don't disagree with you that that's a political problem more than anything. But the concern I have is you're setting up a potential problem for complete instability, as Senator Wilikowski said, for the state budget, because now you're redirecting all of the revenues that we depend on, rather than the royalties going into the general fund, et cetera. You're creating this new fund that's potentially completely sweepable. And I read the opinion that way, just so that you know. I just wanted to be clear on the record that it's your opinion that it's very clear that it's only that one part. I read it as the entire thing is potentially sweepable, and that's my concern with the setup. So it's a conversation we need to continue to have, but I think that, what we're looking for is stability. We're looking to eliminate the volatility, and if there's such an issue right now with these dueling opinions, we should spend more time on it, because the idea that we would put the entire state budget in jeopardy, I don't think that bodes well, just on a sort of a wing and a prayer that we hope. I don't think our constituents would agree that that was responsible decision-making.
Through the chair, Senator McGuire, we agree with you. I think it's we need to have some coalesce around some opinion on what is most likely to occur. And I think you're right. I think that discussion needs to continue, because obviously there is uncertainty within those that need to make the decision. So we're more than willing to engage in a continued conversation on that.
Onward, Commissioner.
Onward. I'm going to take the next set of slides a little bit out of order and jump to going the wrong direction here. Jump to slide 27. Because there's been a couple of concerns associated, and we're now going to talk about the dividend itself. And there's been concern expressed about this plan would create two issues with associated with the dividend. One is volatility, and the other is value issues associated with this new dividend process. And so I think this slide is instructive on both parts. One, quite clearly, the dividend has always been volatile. I mean, it's fluctuated between, well, in the early years, around $300 to this year at about $2,100, and been up and down throughout the life of the dividend based on essentially the returns that we've had, you know, within the stock market over that period of time. If you just look at the last 12 years, for those years, the dividend's been over $1,500. 4 years, it's been between $1,000 and $1,500. 4 years, it's been below $1,000. And so there's been a great deal of volatility in the dividend. And quite frankly, this plan is not going to increase that volatility. In fact, probably will reduce that volatility to some extent. The second thing that I think this shows is that there is no value, set value for what is the base value for the dividend. The dividend value fluctuates from year to year. And I think when we start subtracting everything from $2,000 dividend, I think that's a little disingenuous as far as what the history of the dividend really shows. The dividend will go up and down even under the existing formula. And quite frankly,
you weren't calling Senator Wilikowski disingenuous for mentioning a lower number, were you?
No, I said starting at $2,000, I believe, is a disingenuous.
I think another term might be a little less pejorative. It might be less than a representative. I think we should just de-escalate the language a little bit.
I stand corrected, and I apologize to Senator Wilikowski.
Oh, I'm never true. He can take care of himself.
I'm not one to start conflict just for the sake of conflict. That's not in my DNA. So that was a bad term, but it was not intended to be insulting.
That's your bag, Bill.
Mr.
Please, Senator McGuire.
Thank you, through the chair, Commissioner. Though I do think, inflammatory words aside, this is an important point and something that's built into our presentation as well, that it's been above 1,000, I think, 15 times in total, and below 1,000, 16 times. And it is an important educational point that people need to understand that, I mean, it's been as low as $380. But we happen to be in a time of high earnings because the market did well over a period of time. And there is a political challenge that we have as lawmakers to the fact that the last year's dividend was above 2,000 and this year's projected to be as well. So we have to think about a different vernacular and how we describe it, but I think your point is well made, that there's volatility built into the structure as it stands today about how the dividend is paid out. There'll be a certain amount of volatility built into a POMV structure paying out government funds. Yours is less volatile. And there'll be a certain amount of volatility built into both our plans with how the dividend is paid out in the future if it's royalty-based. And that's just a part of how we've lived in Alaska since we've been receiving the dividend. So maybe think about how you describe it a little differently, but I do think it's an important part of the discussion.
Mr. Then flipping back to slide 26, I think we need to understand exactly what the dividend is as far as what creates the dividend. And the dividend is based on a formula. It was a formula that was a political negotiation at the time that the formula was established. And this actually just kind of walks through the formula. It's the annualized average of the last 5 years' statutory net income. So this is last year's calculation, so it's about $13 billion. You take 21% of the last 5 years' statutory net income. We take half of that, and it's made available to pay the dividend. That's transferred to the dividend fund. It's then divided by the number of eligible applicants and to calculate the check. So it's a formula that gets us to that result. The reality is that, flipping forward to slide 29, and was perceived in, even in the Permanent Fund Corporation Board of Directors resolution back in 2003, the board recognizes that a POMV spending limit methodology may necessitate changes to the permanent fund dividends. The reality is, as soon as we go in and start using earnings for anything other than paying for dividends and inflation proofing, that formula is going to change. Whether it's under Senator McGuire's bill, whether it's under Representative Hawker's bill, whether it's under the bill that the governor has brought forward, whether it's just simply some other formula to use the earnings reserve, that particular formula that calculates the dividend right now is going to change no matter what we do when we start using the earnings reserve.
Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you. You talked a little bit about whether or not using 2,000 or 1,000 was more accurate. If you were to assume, and I know in your calculations you're assuming that return on the permanent fund will be between 6.5% and 7.5%. If you assume a rate of return of 6.5% to 7.5%, our future dividends, if we keep the formula the way it is now, expect it to be closer to 1,000 or closer to 2,000. Or higher than 2,000.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, if we had just a nice flat return at that level, it would stay closer to $2,000. Okay. The reality is that this year we're going to miss that 6.5% return by about 10%. I mean, the right now the permanent fund has negative earnings for the year, and so there's going to be some downward pressure on that dividend right now.
Senator Wilkowski,
if you have negative earnings. So maybe this is good to talk a little bit about how the earnings reserve works. You take money. Do you ever lose money from the earnings reserve? The earnings reserve is invested just like the regular corpus is, correct?
Through Chair Senator Wilkowski, that's correct.
So if you had $7 billion in the earnings reserve today?
Approximately $7 billion, sure.
So if you lose 10%, then you're losing 10% in the earnings reserve also, so you lose $700 million in the earnings reserve.
That is correct.
Okay. And so have you just running some rough numbers here. If there's $7 billion in the earnings reserve, we spend about $900 million for inflation proofing, a billion for inflation proofing.
Senator Wilkowski, that's correct.
Your draw would be $3.3 billion under this plan. Let's assume we're doing this plan. You have inflation proofing in this plan?
To the Chair, Senator Wilkowski, the inflation proofing is within the modeling. There'll be some years where it'll draw more out of the fund than would allow for inflation proofing. There'll be years where there'll be greater inflows into the fund, and over time, the fund grows at the rate of inflation.
So if we were just to look at the actual plan today, so you got $7 billion in the earnings reserve, you're taking $3.3 billion draw, you've got inflation proofing of roughly $1 billion, that's $4.3. You've got another $1 billion for dividends. That's 5.3. You've just lost $700 million. So you've got $1 billion cushion. And you've got $1 billion in the earnings reserve.
To the chair, Senator Wilkowski, because under this plan there would not be a direct inflation proofing payment, that $1 billion would go away. The certainly under our plan, the governor's guaranteeing a $1,000 dividend, so that's more like $700 million for the dividend. So essentially you'd be drawing out the 3.3 draw plus a $700 million dividend, so about 4 billion dollars from that seven. And plus, you would have whatever inflows occur, because even because it's under statutory net income, there will still be inflows into the fund even in years where we lose
dividends and things like
dividends
that.
Dividends and rents and royalties. And
so, if I could, Mr. Chair, so if you got $7 billion, you're paying out $3.3 in dividends. Plus $700 million, so that gets you $4 billion. So if you got $3 billion left, roughly, assuming you don't inflation proof, you have another bad stock market year next year. Some people say we're going into a bear market. Who knows? You've got roughly $4 billion, and you need to make a $3.3 billion draw, and you need to pay out dividends of $700 million, and then we got nothing left. Is my math right?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkoski.
And you really hope you don't have a bad third year, because then you're really in trouble, right?
Under our plan, at when it's below a four times draw, all of the petroleum production tax and royalty would also flow into the earnings reserve, as well as the amount of money coming out of the permanent fund statutory net income.
And you got $150 million in petroleum production taxes this year?
And more in royalties. And of course, that's one of the reasons that we really want to make that $3 billion CBR deposit initially to give us a little more stability in the early years.
Thanks.
Going back then to slide.
I guess I'm going to be real interested in seeing what your CBR strategy is. We had a CBR strategy from the Senate majority, and hardly get return calls on it, but we'll see how it works this year. It is a three-quarter vote, and the governor's concentrated on keeping 11. I think the math changes, and I just hope that that his discussions are more respectful than they've been in the past, because they weren't very open last year. I'm trying to remember which session it was. They kept us here and there for so long, but it wasn't a real open conversation. And Senator Huggins, maybe my memory's faulty.
Mr. Chairman, if I might.
Please.
I'll use a military term, warning order. I'm fixing to give you a warning order, all right? And it's about my constituents. And they may not be indicative of the rest of the state, but here comes the warning order. The other day, a person that was representing what we're talking about now says, I'm just interested in this. I'm not interested in all those other things. Well, we don't have the luxury of that. We have to deal with all those other things. Taxes, I mean, you name what the issue is. And what I'm hearing in a rising tenor from my constituents is, Charlie Huggins, what is going on Juneau? Because you're now spending state money to try to convince, not me spending state money, someone. The administration is spending state money to convince me to do something. There's something wrong with that. And I say there's something wrong with that because the constituents, it's going to bleed over to what we're talking about right here, because they will say, well, if you would do it over here when you're looking to take money and taxes from me, then you're going to trick me on the permanent fund too. And I'm not going to have any of that. Now, is that true across the state? I have no idea. There is a rising tenor that has that sort of tone to it, because people are going, I better start paying closer attention, because they're seeing the dollars and cents of money from the state coffers to be able to advocate for parts of the budget. I think that's a little out of the ordinary, at least in my experience. Like I said, that is not an axiom. It's not a regulation. It's not a truism. It's just me giving you feedback, and that's called a warning order. Thank you.
Chair, Senator Huggins, point taken.
Thank you. We're just discussing. There's no. This is still a friendly discussion, Commissioner, because we're all trying to figure out. We're trying to figure this out, but we're trying to do it with good faith. Senator Wilkoski.
Thank you. We talked a little bit about this last week, but just on the way the dividend is calculated, it's 50% of the royalties, the net royalties. Is that it's not based on the production tax, just the royalties?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkoski, that's correct.
Okay, and then Mr. Chair, So 2016, we said, so you got $650,500,000 in royalties under your fall forecast in 2016. So it would be 650 divided by 2, which is $325 million available.
That is correct.
Okay, and so that would equate, unless we changed it, to a permanent fund check of around $500.
That's correct.
Okay, and then as you move forward in 2017, you got royalties of $757 million. So divide that by 2. I don't know, $550 permanent fund check. Is that rough?
$600 something.
Okay. And is the plan to increase that up to $1,000 every year, or just in the first year or two?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, just in the first year.
Okay. And so, just looking, I mean, you can do a pretty simple, I guess, calculation here. You just look at page 29 of your revenue sources book, and that's royalties net. And I mean, am I doing the right math here? Because you've got some baseline numbers, royalty net 650 in 2016, 757 in 2018, 839 in 2018. And then by 2025, you're at $711 million, which again would leave you with a permanent fund check of around $525 or so.
So, Chair Senator Wilkowski, that particular table you're looking at, I think, may be the unrestricted part of the royalties, so you'd have to add in the additional 25% or 30% that's currently going into the...
That's royalties net. That includes bonuses and interest. So, could I ask, Mr. Chair, could I get a chart from you what you project the permanent fund dividends to be under your plan for the next 10 years?
The Chair, Senator Wilkowski, we can get that for you.
Yes.
Yeah. And I appreciate that point, Senator Wilkowski. 12 years ago, we were dealing with percentage of market value, which passed the House, and I think it narrowly failed the Senate. Governor Murkowski came up with a number. I think it was 1,111. I think there was... I thought alliteration of numbers would convince people that it was a more legitimate promise, but it was also a promise for 1 year, and a lot of people didn't buy it. I mean, is it, and it's when we're sticking to just the true numbers and marketing numbers and realities instead of marketing. That's we've had a lot of marketing approaches, and that's. I think the public wants to know what the numbers really are instead of, hey, you're getting 1,000 this year. But, and appreciate the question from Senator Wilkowski. I think this should be done with informed consent to the public, and that's why I kind of like the vote, but maybe if I mention that once in a while, the fever might catch, but Senator Wilkowski.
And since there's been some allegations that we've misrepresenting what future dividends would be, could I ask you to give me a chart, that same chart, assuming a 6.5% to 7.5% return, which is what your assumptions are, what the dividend would be if we kept the dividend calculation the way it is at the current time.
Chair, Senator Wilkowski, we can get that for you as well.
Thank you.
So are we putting you in trouble with Senator McKinnon upstairs right now?
Probably. Let me go through this one. Through this one last slide, and then I'll, which is the last one on the dividend. And then it really goes into the sectional, and then I can turn it over to Bill Milks. So the idea is that this is one way to calculate the dividend. The administration, as he said, this plan is written in pencil, and if we are certainly open to other ways to calculate the dividend. When we looked at this originally, it was frankly we adopted the idea from Senator McGuire, and we had at lunch that one day, and I said that the first time I looked at it, I thought it was too clever. But as I looked at it and realized, no, it really does tie the dividend to the economic health of the state. It really becomes pro-cyclical with the state's economic health, that it made sense. And so eventually we adopted it as the idea for the particular plan. But if people wanted to look at a flat dividend, or a dividend that was tied, as ours is, to a royalty, or if we did it as a percentage of the sustainable draw, or we found some other method to calculate the dividend, we are open to those suggestions. This is not something that we're going to fall on our sword over, but what we do need is a dividend that is pro-cyclical with the economic health of the state, not one that's counter-cyclical as we're currently in, where we're paying out historically largest dividends at a time when the state is in a historically bad economic situation. And so what we want is that the dividend would reflect the health of the state's economy and be paid out accordingly. So we're open to other suggestions and willing to discuss those.
You need to go now. I wanted, maybe Mr. Milks can stay for a couple of minutes. We can clarify the questions on the legal opinions. Those are that we're still waiting on. Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, through the chair, and thank you, Mr. Hoffbeck, for your presentation. I know you need to go, but I just want to say on the record, I think we're presenting Thursday, but I echo those sentiments that, and have said that from the beginning. It's not about, you know, whose name is on the bill. The elements are in pencil and they're movable. The point is to get to a structure that is less volatile, more predictable, and more reflective, I think, as the commissioner said, of the state's true economic health right now. And so there's a lot of ways you can do it, and I just want this committee to know that I echo those sentiments, that it may be that this committee decides that there's a different way that they want to pay out the dividend based on other philosophical points. They're movable, but the original point, as he said, was to try and frankly it stemmed from the debate on Prop 1 in part, that it was my understanding whatever you agreed with on the progressivity percentages and where you agreed in the bottom half on rolling back ACEs or changing ACEs, amending it, in this case to the benefit of the people, we've saved ourselves over $400 million by the changes we made. So pat ourselves on the back for that. The public, my neighbors, didn't completely understand the degree to which we were dependent on crude oil. And that conversation was an interesting one to me. And so the thinking is by linking it to the royalties itself that you draw a greater nexus between the success and the health of our economy and that which comes into individual family pocketbooks. And that's a good partnership. So those are just on the record that I agree that they're movable places.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Hoffman. You have to leave, and we'll just have a few questions from Mr. Milks on the legal opinions.
Thank you.
Sure. And Mr. Milks, did you have any questions or understanding of the request that we made on Thursday about the legal opinions? And are you having any difficulties putting those together? Do they have to be redacted or go through? Just give us kind of an update of where you're at on that, because I think we would like.
Yes,
I'm not a lawyer. I'm going to have some other folks help me ferret through those.
Chairman, we did a quick search on permanent fund on legal opinions, came up with over 200. So rather than send 200 documents over to opinions, then we're try to limit them down to our more recent ones or ones on these direct issues, because there are opinions on a wide variety of subjects, from residency requirements to children to other opinions that just happen to talk about opinions. So but we are in the process of narrowing them down, and we will get them to the committee.
And I would be especially interested in ones that Attorney General Battella was involved with, because he's apparently continues to be an advisor with the administration in some capacity, and sometimes more transparent than others. Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, Mr. Milks. And I think really collectively what we're saying is that we're looking for, this is an opinion from you and the Attorney General, but I think what we're looking for is a thorough analysis that leads us to this present place in history, why you debunk or support elements of these past Attorney General opinions. I think the residency issue and you know, the Zobel and that, I mean, I'm not looking for that. For me personally, I'm looking for the sweep issue and the viability of this particular new fund structure and how susceptible it is to a legal challenge destabilizing the government. And what I really think is that this is a place where it's time to lead. So what we're looking for is this Attorney General, as a representative of this governor, to say this is our opinion, and you can include again elements of past Attorney General opinions. I think the chairman is absolutely correct that certainly it would be relevant to have Attorney General Bruce Battello's fingerprints on it, but what is your ruling? And you get to do that. That's part of leadership. But we want you to hang your hat on it.
Senator Wilkowski, do you have any clarifying questions that you'd be comfortable with the request?
I you got dueling attorney opinions. I don't know that we're going to resolve that here. There's just two. We certainly respect your opinion and the Attorney General's opinion, and I certainly respect our legislative attorney's opinion. And we're not the court, and ultimately the court will have the final say on what's constitutional. I'm more concerned about what are the impacts to the state if we go ahead and pass this and then the court says it's unconstitutional. Because you're right, Hickel versus Cooper is out there, but what our attorneys are saying is this is different than Hickel versus Cooper. This is a different situation. And then you've also got this situation where you've got Attorney General's opinion, we've got our attorneys saying once you put the money in the permanent fund, you can't take it out. It's irretrievable is the word that was used. So I'm more concerned about what are the potential implications if we do this and then the court ultimately says after a lawsuit, you shouldn't have done that. We've passed a budget. Does the budget become, I assume the appropriations are unconstitutional at that point. What do we do? Do we shut down government? I mean, how do we resolve that situation cleanly without putting completely stopping the state? That's, I guess, my concern.
I suspect there's not a legal opinion on a scenario of commingled general funds, earnings reserves, transferring constitutional budget reserves and commingled. I really doubt there's an opinion on that because this is a pretty radical departure from where we're going. Maybe it's not radical, but it's a much different departure. So there's probably not. I'm just guessing, but we need all the guidance we can, and as we're trying to make that. This isn't the Judiciary Committee, but we have three members of the Judiciary Committee here, and it's going to come up eventually, and it's part of our due diligence. Next meeting, we will have probably just the initial presentation by Senator McGuire. It'll probably a 30 to 40 minute presentation is what we're looking at. We have Mr. Brad Keithley and Scott Goldsmith. We're still on the confirmation stage. If he participates, it will be telephonically to discuss some of the other issues involved with this proposal that the public's talking about. So there are a couple of economists that have been active as citizens and professionals in this, and we're trying to include a wide variety of points of view. So we'll have you will share the day with those presenters, and then on that Thursday evening, beginning at 5:30, we're going to start the public testimony, and that will be an educational process for us for what the public says. I participate in the unfiltered forums of talk radio very frequently, as recently as this morning. I know what the tenor is there, but I've made some statements about Alaskans need to weigh in on this, the ones that don't have a lobbyist, that don't have a consultant, that we're not going to hear a marketing approach for them. I think we're going to hear some testimony of folks that we work for, the kind of things they tell us in the shopping center, the grocery store, the gas station, the post office. And we're not at our post office, and we're in this, and whenever I use a word like isolated or trapped down here, I always hear from my Juno friends that remind me, so while we're trapped and isolated down here, I want to make sure that the public can still weigh in with us. With that, it only makes me more popular when my Juno friends attack me. So, no. With that, we will stand in adjournment until our lengthy day on Thursday. So, thank everybody for their participation and questions, and we are adjourned.